Welcome back to Tuned In with Radio Laurier. My name is Keegan Gingrich, and this week I had the pleasure of speaking with one of the most renowned broadcasters in Canada, Alan Cross. Known for such programs as The Ongoing History of New Music and The Secret History of Rock, Alan is undoubtedly one of the best sources for getting in tune with the Canadian music scene. This week, Alan and I talk about the difficulties faced by Canadian musicians, the changing nature of radio, and continuing to always push forward. Alan, thanks for coming on and doing this. We're going to start off with a couple rapid fire questions. I've been told they're not rapid fire, but I'll keep them in a manageable time frame.
All right, do your best.
If you had to pick from CDs or vinyl, what would you pick?
Vinyl right now.
Vinyl right now. Good answer. Chocolate or vanilla?
I'm a vanilla guy. I'm sorry. I have always been a vanilla guy, and I probably always will be.
Take it to the grave, eh? Mac or PC?
I use both. I'm talking to you on a Mac. However, for my day-to-day writing and basic, you know, hardcore computer stuff, I use Windows. So PC.
Changing it up. I like it. If you were to choose, would you rather have a sunrise or a sunset? Would you rather experience?
I like sunrises. I'm a morning person. I'm okay with sunrises.
Good. Nice. And the best vocalist of the 1990s, in your opinion?
Best of the 1990s. Chris Cornell.
Chris Cornell. Great choice. Now, if you were stranded on an island and you had to take three things, what would you take?
Three things.
It can be anything.
And I'm stranded on an island.
Stranded. Nobody else there.
All right. First of all, a satellite phone.
Good call. Practical.
Secondly, I would have some sort of desalination machine. And third, I would probably have a Kindle with a very large battery.
Great call. And then you can listen to anything that you want.
Yes.
Do wonderful things for you. I love it. This one's a little bit of a deeper question, but I feel like we don't get asked this often enough. What are some words that you think about every day, whether it's motivational or something to kind of keep you going? Is there anything that you really keep in mind?
Well, one of the things I've never done is coast. I have never really spent any time thinking that, oh, I can just let things happen. No, you've always got to keep moving forward. I never really spent an awful lot of time looking at the past. And one thing that I've always lived by is that you have a best before date on your forehead. You just can't see it. The only thing that you can try to do is push that best before date into the future as much as you possibly can.
I think it's something we don't think about every day, right? You know, you just kind of live life as it comes at you, and you don't really think about, hey, I've got a limited time. I've got an expiry date. So that's great. I think it's something that I've been thinking about a little bit more too recently. So it's nice. I like that. How have you been most affected by COVID? I mean, I think you have the opportunity to work from home more. But how has it affected you personally?
Well, I do work from home on a, in a normal world, I work from home. So it's really not that big of a transition. The problem is the face-to-face interactions have completely disappeared. And when you work alone or you work without any sort of external input, you're always the smartest person in the room. That's not a good thing. You want to be in amongst other people so that you can learn from them, so that you can be challenged by them. When you're sitting at home by yourself, and it doesn't matter how self-disciplined you are, you need that external input. And that's the thing I miss the most. Having people smarter than me or people knowing different things than me, helping me learn and become better at what I do.
Right. Do you ask the wife for advice at any point?
I do. But, she and I are in different industries. But so we do talk. But it's still not the same. It's me and her and two dogs.
Yeah. Sometimes the dogs aren't always the most helpful either.
No, right now you're going to hear one barking in the background because she's annoyed at something. I'm not really sure what.
it's tends to be the case with dogs that way. On a similar note, do you think that this has ignited or reignited a passion for podcasting, for audiobooks, for things that have been up and coming, but do you think it's maybe fast-tracked those interests for even for younger people like myself?
It definitely has fast-tracked things because more podcasts have come online this year than in any other year previous. So people are looking to do things. They're looking to occupy themselves. They're looking to try the only or one of the very few growth industries right now when it comes to entertainment. So I'm not terribly surprised that we've seen this growth. We're going to continue to see it for a while. In fact, I read something today that by the end of next year, podcasting in the U.S. will be a $1 billion business. It's growing. Interest is growing, and people are looking for things to occupy their time because if you're in lockdown or if you're in a situation where your interaction with other people are limited, you're looking for some kind of input. I know that I've been listening to more podcasts and more audiobooks. So they have become really important connections to the outside world.
How have you found that it's kind of evolved from what radio, not even what it used to be, but how has it been an add-on, I think, to that sense of broadcasting? Is it a natural progression or is it something that's its own?
I think it's another thing that can live together with radio. Radio has been around since, it's been around for at least 100 years now. And many people have tried to kill it off. It has never,
it hasn't worked.
It's still here. It is an extension of radio. It's an extension of audio. And one of the things that radio groups are doing are actually embracing podcasting because it allows them to give their audiences, their listeners, on-demand audio programming. And you have complete control over what that programming is. That's what people want these days. The idea of sitting around waiting for your favorite song to come on the radio, I mean, that's crazy. It doesn't happen anymore. It's why we don't have videos on Much Music or MTV anymore. You're going to wait around all day to see your favorite video? No, you're going to go to YouTube and there it is. So what radio is doing very slowly is coming to grips with the on-demand environment today. However, the old school radio, which means you turn on the speakers and or you turn on the radio and whatever comes on the speakers is what you get, is still very powerful and profitable and popular. The problem is that radio is having to evolve into these new audio streams while they continue to do what they've always been doing for the past 100 years. So it's kind of like trying to change the plane or change the wings of an airplane that's flying at 38,000 feet. It's very tricky, but it can be done, but it's going to be done slowly. Almost all the radio groups have some kind of podcasting investment now, and they are looking at ways to repurpose what they do, which is to create great audio and to have great storytellers into this new world. And a lot of them are doing quite well.
Yeah. Why is it that nowadays, and this has been, I mean, for the past 30 years, people saying that radio is dying or, radio's dead or anything along those lines when it's so clearly not the case. Why is that such a common discussion point?
The people that are saying that are the early adopters of technology. People who get into things like satellite radio or streaming or anything that's newer than radio, which is just about every form of audio that there is. Like I said, radio has been around in its current form since about 1920. So, these people live in a bit of a bubble because if you look at ratings and reach of radio, it's actually gone up this year. Because people are looking for curated experiences for both news and music, information and music, to get them through this pandemic crisis. And it's weird. Radio hasn't been this popular in a very, very long time. However, it's also in a financial difficulty right now because advertisers aren't buying ads, and that's the only way that radio makes any kind of money. So listenership is way up. Advertising is way down. But what we can hope for is that once all this clears away and we get past the pandemic, we will have acquired a huge increase in listeners to traditional radio.
I think we, on that note too, I think we forget how important radio has been to every aspect of society. You know, I, as a history major, I think about, you know, FDR in the States, he had his fireside chats in the 30s to keep everybody motivated and to keep people updated on what was going on during the Great Depression. And I just wonder if we kind of sometimes forget where things evolved from. I know for a lot of people like myself and for you as well, I'm sure growing up, radio was the thing. And it was something that you had. You might have had a couple of TV channels, but radio was what kept people motivated, right? Is it important that we cherish that as its own thing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, radio is one of the very few mediums, if not the only medium, that has a world day dedicated to it. If you look up World Radio Day, you'll see that it's been designated by, I think it's UNESCO, to... you know, to celebrate and reflect on how important radio has been, this kind of free communication to the rest of to everybody else, how important it's been to the development of the rest of the world. So, it's again, for those who say that radio is dead, I point you to when talking movies came out. I point you to when television came around. I point you to when satellite radio came around. I point you to when the internet happened, and radio has not gone away. It is going to be here for a while yet.
Is there anything with the industry, I guess, of radio? I'm not sure if that makes sense particularly. Is there anything that needs to change in the culture of it itself, or anything that you feel is needs to adapt or hasn't adapted yet to what I guess modern times?
It's tricky because my experience with executives who are running the radio industry are very committed to running radio the way it has been run with whatever tweaks are required for the modern world. But at the same time, they're looking at ways to make it more appealing to people under the age of 30 who grew up with the internet and an on-demand world. So those things definitely do have to change. How, though, is going to be the tricky part, because when the internet came along and we had the dot-com bubble at the beginning of this century, radio groups invested an awful lot of money in new technology. And a couple of years later, it all burst. And all these radio groups ended up losing a tremendous amount of money. A lot of people were looking to buy or to create proprietary online features for radio. So they would spend 6 months building these platforms, only to find out that after 6 months, it was already two months out of date. So radio has been very wary about jumping too far into the technology space because it moves so fast. And by the time you get your head wrapped around it, it's moved on to something completely different. Now radio has a better idea that online is where so many people live. And okay, if that's the case, how do we exploit that? How do we respond to that? How do we otherwise use that without breaking the bank? Yeah. I'll give you just a quick example. If, back in the day, radio stations were building their own websites right from scratch, right from what we would call a wireframe. Now it's like, oh, for God's sake, we'll just buy a theme on WordPress. And we know that yeah. WordPress will take care of all the back end stuff. And we don't have to, constantly recode something. What do we do with platforms like Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and YouTube? Back in 2001, 2002, none of these things existed. So we had to make them up ourselves. And all of them, of course, crashed and burned when YouTube and Instagram and Spotify and Facebook and everything else came along. So now we know where we can make our bets. I don't think Facebook's going away anytime tomorrow. Google certainly not going away anytime tomorrow. So why not use a lot of off-the-shelf stuff when it comes to moving forward? And that's what we're doing.
I love that. What... going back a little bit and making a pivot, what got you hooked on radio? What got you hooked on the concept of it?
My grandmother gave me a transistor radio for my 6th birthday. I didn't ask for it. My parents didn't tell her to get me a radio, but there it was. And back where I was growing up, we had 3 TV stations. One of them was in French, and the only radio I knew was what Mom and Dad played on the kitchen counter or in the car. And when I got my own radio, I realized that there was a lot more out there than what Mom and Dad were listening to. There was a lot more music, there were a lot more personalities, a lot more information and entertainment. And it got especially cool in the wintertime when you had something called ionospheric skip, which meant that AM radio signals could travel many, many hundreds, even thousands of miles to where I was in, you know, the prairies in Manitoba. So I could listen to what was going on in Denver and Chicago and Louisville, Kentucky and Cincinnati and so on. And even some nights I could listen to Mexican stations that were beaming in from across the border. So what happened was I became entranced with all these mystery voices coming out of the atmosphere. And I thought, okay, this is really cool. And I would like to be part of it one day. And that's what happened.
Was it always the game plan? Were you aiming for
it? Well, no. I mean, the game plan was to be a newsman, a journalist, an anchor, a foreign correspondent, something like that. That's what I wanted to do, not be some long-haired, dope-smoking FM radio DJ. That was never the plan. I kind of fell into that by accident after I worked towards being a news person and actually got to be one for 23 days, realized that I hated it, and was fortunately rescued by a job offer at an FM radio station, and that's pretty much where I've been ever since.
I wonder how does that translate for youth, do you think, nowadays? I think of how you have those unique experiences, and I think of even Ron McLean, who just got kind of thrown into it, and then same with him 30 some years later, he has this amazing career, and yourself and him, I would say, are like the cornerstones of Canadian radio in that way, or personalities in that form. How do youth get attracted to those things nowadays? Because I think we have such a world of content being thrown at us. Like, you know, you can do a podcast, but like it might not succeed, or you can do radio, but you might not succeed. How do we stay motivated to do those things?
But that's the way it is for everything. When I got into this, I had no idea that I'd still be doing it 39 years later. There's a lot that's beyond your control, but what you can control is, you know, how hard you work at it. So with me, I expected radio to be about a 7 to 10 year career. And after that, I would probably transition to doing something else, maybe within the industry or move into a different part of the industry. Well, that never really happened. So what you have to understand is any career is full of zigs and zags. It's not linear. And you end up with a number of occasions in your career where you're going to have to make a decision. If you do this, well, a whole bunch of things are going to happen. If you do that, a whole bunch of other things are going to happen. And you just got to hope that you make the right decisions all the way through.
You've talked to a lot of students that are in broadcasting, in journalism, and you do a lot of volunteer consulting, from what I understand as well. What do you hear from them when they're talking to you, asking for advice? Do you hear passion? Do you hear drive to do things? What kind of emotions do you get out of those people and those students?
Well, I get uncertainty more than anything else. I want to do this, but I don't know how to get in, and I don't know what to do once I get in there. My answer to them is always, you know what? That doesn't matter what line of work you choose to go into. These are the things that you're going to be faced. So radio is a little bit different because the requirements for what you need to be able to do have changed so dramatically over the past 15 years. You know, the idea of having to, you know, back in the day, for example, radio was talking on the air. That's what you did. Now you got to, you know, figure out how to do video. You got to figure out how to write for a website. You got to figure out how to do a whole bunch of different things. You have to acquire all these different skill sets. Maybe you have to know how to edit video and audio. It's the marketable skills or the skills that you need to succeed in the industry have expanded greatly. Yeah. And some of the things that I used to be really, really, really good at, you don't need to do anymore because technology has eclipsed those things, those duties, those skills. So, you know, you get in and you observe, you ask questions, and then you see what happens.
Would you say it would be more of an advantage to anybody else than to take the time to learn things like the video editing and learn that all on your own? Yeah.
Oh yes. It used to be a big deal that you knew how to work a spreadsheet or that you knew how to work Microsoft Office. Well, that's, you are expected to know that now. However, if you know a little bit of HTML, if you know how to use, Logic or Pro Tools, if you know how to maybe use a Final Cut Pro or a similar sort of video editing program, these are going to make you much more valuable to any prospective employer.
Yeah. When you're talking about those skills too, what kind of skills did you have going into not even radio itself, but you've run the ongoing history of new music for 27 years now. What kind of things at the time did you need then that you don't necessarily need now?
Well, I used to be really good at editing magnetic tape. I was a great audio editor using tape. Tape doesn't exist anymore, so those skills out the window.
Yeah. What keeps you motivated to do all these projects? I mean, you have so many on your plate and you're so proficient in doing all of them. How do you maintain that?
Well, I'm bored. I get bored very easily. Secondly, I just like what I'm doing. So I'm always looking for some new challenges, something to keep me motivated, something to keep me interested in what I do. I also realize that if I don't keep moving forward and finding new things and becoming more valuable or more visible, that somebody else will come along and do it. And I cannot have that.
No room for failure. In that way,
there's plenty of room for failure, and there's lots of failure, let me tell you. But just because you fail doesn't mean you shouldn't try again. You're going to fail 19 times out of 20, but that 20th time makes all the difference.
Right. You were even the program director at The Edge for better part of 8 years. Would that be fair to say?
That was about five there, okay. And then three at Y108 in Hamilton.
What was that like being one of the head contact points for that, and not running the show, but I mean,
I was running the show. Oh, no. I was most definitely running the show. That's what a program director does. I like to say that the program director's job description is whatever comes out of the speakers is his or her fault.
Right.
That was the traditional sort of career path. You start working at small radio stations, work your way up. You get a job at a big radio station, then you get into management, and then you go up from there. That was my career track. That's the way things were done. And I thought I was doing the right thing by getting into management, and I'm glad I did. I don't think I was particularly brilliant at it. I was okay. But what it did is it taught me more about the industry, taught me a lot about human interaction. It taught me a lot about time management. And I'm glad I had the experience of doing that. I don't know if I'd ever do it again because it is a 24/7 job and it's extremely stressful. And at one point, I think I had 19 people reporting to me. Plus I had to do my own job. So that's a lot. That's a lot on anybody's shoulders. For any length of time. So I did it. I did it to the best of my ability. And I can move on to something else.
What did you mentioned that you learned a lot about people. What did you learn from that? And what have you learned from conducting so many interviews and speaking with so many artists and people in the industry? What are some general things that you've learned about people?
Well, first of all, the people are way more messed up than you would ever imagine. Once you start overseeing a staff, you realize that everybody is different. Everybody has different priorities, different emotional tolerances, different outlooks on the world, different ways of interacting with other people. And you got to be able to juggle all that. And of course, when you're dealing with a group of creatives, creative people are extremely hard, or can be extremely hard to manage, because what makes them creative makes them hard to manage. You learn all about that sort of stuff. Interviews, that's a different thing, because it's a sanitized, controlled environment where you are face-to-face with somebody for a very limited amount of time, and you have to get the story in that amount of time. If I have to say one thing that I learned about interviews is that the bigger the star, the better the interview they are, because they understand that talking to the media is part of their job. And if they want to do well at their gig, well, then they have to get the media on side as much as possible. So they understand that they need to talk to people like me, but they also understand that they want to make sure that I see them in the most positive light possible, because that only reflects well on them, or so the theory goes.
Right. In that manner, who would you say the most, not even the most professional, but the best person that you've had the chance to speak with ever?
Well, I'll tell you, there's two. I keep coming back to these two. There's Bowie, who had this uncanny ability to, when you're talking to him, to make you feel like you were the only person in the world that mattered. Tremendous amount of charisma. And I just love talking to him because he was such a powerful personality. Then there's Bono, who is the easiest interview in the world, because when he sits down to talk to you, again, you feel like you're the only person in the world that matters. But with him, what you say is, "Hi, Bono, how are things going?" And that's it for 45 minutes. He will just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. There has never been a time that I've talked to him where one of his assistants hasn't appeared and dragged him physically by the arm out of that interview room on the way to someplace else. And on the way out the door, he's still talking.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
he's extraordinarily articulate. He's got a wonderful turn of phrase. And anytime I get a chance to talk to him, I will.
That's awesome. Hearing those stories is always fun, because you never know how people are going to be when they're bigger personalities like that. And especially in music, you just don't know how they are. And hearing that people are kind of how you picture them is kind of fun.
Well, when people tell you that you should never meet your heroes, I've never really been disappointed. So it's been okay.
The Canadian music scene, I want to pivot to quickly and talk about, because I feel like you have a really good temperature gauge on that. With everything that's going on with COVID right now, how is that going to impact a scene that from the outside feels like it's not as easy to tour in Canadian music, not as easy to make money? How are they going to adapt to this, do you think?
This is... don't know.
Yeah.
Really don't know. Everything is still being written. We don't know what, people want to know, well, where is this all going to lead? Where are we going with this? The answer is, I don't know. In fact, nobody knows, because we don't know when this is all going to end.
Right.
So we'll see. I do know that for my parents and grandparents had their lives changed forever by the Great Depression in the 1930s. It's very possible that by the time this is over, the COVID pandemic will have an effect, a similar long-lasting effect on us as we go forward in our lives. It'll just be burned into our skulls, and we will change our behaviors and change our attitudes as a result. So it's really hard to say. What I've been telling musicians who have been asking me about this is keep a diary. Keep a diary, and then in a couple of years, go back and look at it, and you can see exactly what happened.
And then the best stories can come out too.
Well, yeah, and we're going to see lots of stories. I mean, artists, for example, right now, they've got nothing to do because they can't tour, and can't record in the studio. what they are doing is creating art. So what kind of art is going to come out of this? Will there be a pandemic sound? Will this forever change the way we enjoy live music? Will it change the dynamics and the economics of recording studios? How will the recording industry evolve as a result of this? We're seeing, for example, that Warner Music made 71% of their revenue this last quarter from revenues from streaming, which is incredible. This could, you know, hasten, for example, the demise of the CD. This could accelerate the industry's embracing of things like virtual reality. I don't know. It's still really, really early in the game.
And we just don't know what's going to happen next.
Nope, we do not.
with Canadian musicians particularly, what we have seen a lot is a connection with community. You've seen it a lot from the Arkells. We've seen it from so many different groups who are now going out of their way to, you know, host those Instagram live events and connect with fans from everywhere. I think it's something that's been ingrained in Canadian music for a long time. Do you think that sense of community and like a we're all together in this is unique to Canada, or is it just something that we kind of push out and we emanate?
Well, it seems to be, I don't know if it's unique to Canada, but it is certainly manifesting itself in Canada. And I think the thing, we have to go back to what defines a Canadian. We tend to be a lot more focused on the good of the community, the good of the whole, than America is, where it's all about rugged individualism and personal responsibility. We're more, you know, community-based. So maybe when we see the Arkells doing what they're doing and some of the other people that are getting involved in these community-based things, maybe that's just a representation, a manifestation of our national character.
And I think it's something that we've seen for a long time with bands like that Canadians associate with, you know, the Tragically Hip. We can go with maybe the Arkells are a new version of that. Do you think that's something that continues, or do we become more cynical at any point? I'm wondering whether that changes, or is it hard to predict?
Again, your guess is as good as mine. Not a clue. It will work itself out when it works itself out.
It's amazing. It's weird to see it in real time.
It's extraordinarily weird to see it. You know, and we have it listed. We have existed on an accelerated way of living. This virus will work itself out at its own space, at its own speed.
I love it, Alan. I want to say thank you for taking the time to talk today. I appreciate it. I know you're on vacation right now. Aside from vacation, how have you been, you know, spending your days? Mainly work, or?
Mainly work. I mean, I maintain my standard day, which means getting up at 7, being at my desk in my office here at 7:30, working through until noon, having lunch, then working through until 4:30, and then try not to work in the evening as I watch TV, stay, you know, hang out with the wife and the dogs, and that's it.
And call it a day. It's a nice, peaceful continuation, but a weird piece.
It is. And again, I still feel like I'm trapped. Right. I'm extraordinarily lucky because everything I need is here. But I'm normally somebody who's a traveler. And I would have been on airplanes once or twice a month, every month so far this year, going everywhere from Singapore and Thailand to the UK to Poland to San Diego, all these trips that I had planned and booked. Nope, not happening. And when I can't travel, I get grumpy.
Yeah. Where, you're a big traveler, where's the most inspiring place that you've visited?
Well, you know, it depends what you're doing. I mean, the foreign place that I've been the most is probably Singapore. I have friends there. I like the country. I should have been there already this year, twice, as a matter of fact. But I go anywhere. The thing that I love the most is when you step off the plane and you breathe in the air and it smells and feels different. And you automatically know that I'm not at home anymore. This is an adventure that's about to begin.
And the adventure's the fun part. You going into the unknown, not knowing what's going to happen next.
Completely. And I love that. And the idea that, haven't been able to do this for this length of time is just killing me.
Are you going to go on an all out spree of travel as soon as you get done? Whenever we're out of this,
I hope so. I would like to, but we'll see
what the future holds.
Yeah, exactly.
Alan, what are you up to right now? What are the things that people can check out where to find you?
Well, I always update my website, whether I'm on vacation or not, ajournalofmusicalthings.com. I'm working on a project with some people to create a music venue in Buffalo. I am involved with the Alma Combo. I am involved with some podcasting projects, and then all my regular radio and TV stuff.
It's awesome. Something new coming out all the time for you, eh?
All the time.
Alan, I appreciate you taking the time to talk today. It's nice to get your insight on things that are happening right now. And I don't think there's a better person to speak to for it. So thank you for taking the time.
I appreciate it. Thanks for asking.
Not a problem. We'll talk to you sometime soon. And for everybody listening, thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Tuned In. Check us out on social media at Radio Laurier, where you can find all the latest updates from our continually growing selection of content. Know someone who would be interested in coming on one of our shows? Find all of our contact information on our website, radiolaurier.com. I'm Keegan Gingrich. See you next time.